Welcome to the Q4 and full year 2009 results presentation of Randstad. We have our usual setup today. Ben will take us through the performance and strategy. Robert-Jan will take us through the financials. After that, we have a Q&A session. Of course, we kindly ask you to only ask two questions so that everyone will have a shot at it. I also have to ask you to please shut down your mobile phones. We've had some problems with that in the past, so please put that one down. We have also some unusual things. It's the last time we'll talk about the pro forma figures, because now that will be behind us. That will make life easier for some people. There's the unusual thing today that it's the last time that Lester is present. My colleague in IR department, he'll be leaving for our German operations next week. Sad to see him go, but job done fantastically, so well deserved. Thanks for that, and we bought you some Dutch flowers to enjoy your last week in the Netherlands. Of course, as we have these cameras available, please wave goodbye to your foreign fan club as well. With that, I'll give the floor to Ben. Thanks.
Yes, good afternoon and good morning, whoever is on the other side of the world. Super tall, huh, Lester?
Yeah.
Those are different words for that. 2009, looking back on the year, I think it's a year where obviously had two phases. One is the internal part of what happened. Well, we are pretty pleased on what happened, actually. We had two big challenges. One was the merger, and we are extremely pleased actually on how that went. We reached all our targets actually earlier than we had anticipated, and we went even beyond our targets because we also made quite a number of changes in operations, opcos and countries where we didn't expect that to be able to do that for the next few years. The second part about which we were pretty pleased is the speed with which we, well, actually we, the people in our company adapted the organization to the big decline in revenues, obviously. The part about which we were less happy, but it's also the part which we could not influence, obviously, was the crisis we were facing. Again, giving the speed and the level of this crisis, we were pretty pleased and are pretty pleased on how the company reacted. We did actually use the tools, you know, unit steering, manage on actuals, not on expectations. We're gonna talk again, I'm sure, during the questions on expectations again. It's very nice to know what we expect, but it doesn't matter because it won't influence what we do. We will only react on actuals because that's the only reliable indicator we have. It's actually proven to be pretty reliable so far. If we go to slide five, is it? Revenue development. The picture you've seen often, only of course it changes every quarter a little bit. We add a quarter. The decline on the top right side, where you see all the markets following the same pattern, one a bit more severe than the other. And what also is noticeable, although it's lots of lines, is that the Dutch market is more or less stable at the bottom, whereas many other markets are recovering. On the right bottom hand side, you see the Randstad performance in those markets. I'll get back to the main markets in a minute. Also what's happening, of course, is what was to be expected. That's also why it says by the top line of ours, the press release is classical patterns, blue collar improving in many markets, actually turning into growth, whereas January is even considerably better than Q4 in many markets. Clerical business in some markets improving and professionals lagging behind, but they also lag behind, of course, in declining. That is the usual pattern. Whereas also we'll discuss a bit more on the pattern on margins, by the way, comparing to the recession we had at the beginning of this century, because that also makes interesting comparisons. Revenue -18%, but a big improvement through the quarter, as you have read in our press release. -13% in December. Well, to come to an average of -18%, you know where we're coming from. In-house and the industrial part showing the strongest recovery. Professionals we discussed. I'll get back to the margin in a minute. Operating expenses, at 500 million. We all had to chip in 1 euro each because we promised you we would be below 500 million. So it's now 500 million minus 1 euro. I just paid that back from my salary in Q4. We made that. Obviously, we were less aggressive in the latter part of the quarter because we saw markets recovering. So we didn't feel the need to push extra on savings. We actually took care of the fact that we could maintain a bigger part of our organization to benefit from an upturn. We spent quite a lot more money on marketing, especially in France, where we introduced the Randstad brand, replacing VeriOBis, obviously, with big success. Quite a number of you have been in our Investors Day in France, where François Béharel shared his plans with you. The brand awareness is at about the same level as the old VeriOBis brand was, and that has been created in only actually a couple of months. So that's very encouraging to see that happening. EBITDA margin 3.3%, which is below our standard, as you know, because we have the ambition to have at least 4, and in a normal market 5 to 6. Comparing to peers, it's not so bad, but still, we are striving to get to the 4%, obviously. We also shared with you, by the way, as you might remember, on our Investors Day, the scenarios, and also which one we would think we need to get to the 4%. Huh? The main markets. Start with the Netherlands, slide 7, minus 21%. The Dutch market dipped later than the other markets. And because of that, it's also logical, it'll also recover a bit later. We're now at about minus 18% of the latest industry data. So improving slightly, but for sure we're not having a party yet. The good news is both Tempo Team and Randstad are at market, whereas Randstad had been below market for a couple of quarters, but we corrected that. Yacht is below the average of the market, obviously. It's professionals business, that's late cyclical, so we couldn't expect that to be at market average, although it would have been nice, obviously. Gross margin under pressure. We've seen that in most markets that we've shared with you, especially with large accounts, although the decline has a bit softened. I also compared what happened to the gross margin at the beginning of this century. If you look at what happened in 2000 to 2004, we lost actually, I think it was 3.4% gross margin over a period of 4 years. We haven't lost 3.4% yet. The reasons, of course, the decline occurs later. I've shared with you before, but I'll share it again. The moment the volume started to decline, we usually are able, our industry actually, to maintain our margins. And according to me, it's because of two reasons. One is we have contracts, existing contracts, with clients who are not being renegotiated. That means you still supply them at the former rates. And the second part is, if our volumes start to decline, that usually is in a situation where unemployment is relatively low, so there's scarcity in a number of segments of the market, so you can still maintain your prices in those segments. If then volume keeps on dropping, unemployment goes down, clients start to renegotiate, and that's where you see the decline in gross margin, as we have seen in every downturn, and also again in this one. And then usually at about the time the margin really starts to drop seriously, volumes start to recover. The last part, of course, is always a bit of an uncertainty, but it looks as if the same is happening again in this one, although it has been more severe than we've ever seen before. So in Holland, an EBITDA margin of 7.2%, which is still excellent. Holland has never let us down in contributing to the profit of the company. And as we said, professionals are still low, but stabilizing, so not declining anymore, which is also to be expected. If we look at France, biggest worry in France has been, of course, being able to execute the planned reorganizations. It took us 9 or 10 months to get the approval from the court in the end and the unions, because they fought us in court. The strategy there is to prevent companies from reorganizing as long as possible. If you then have a short dip, then it doesn't happen anymore. Anyhow, that of course didn't help, having about 500 people in the company that were just waiting to leave with a bag of money. You can imagine those are not the most motivated employees you can have. And we also know, at least we could know, that one of those can demotivate 9 others, or at least keep them from working. We've now been able to execute a reorganization. We're in good shape. We invested in the marketing quite a lot. That also boosted morale. And I'll share with you the January number. We were at about 0% difference with last year in France in January. So that's quite an improvement from where we came from. So we are pretty optimistic that as we said earlier, somewhere maybe in or at the end of the second quarter, I would expect us to be in line with market at least. Healthcare business has been growing. Professionals bottomed out. It's also clear. Focus on regaining market share. It's there, but it's obvious. We don't even need to write that down there. Cost structure is done, and we didn't lose money. DSO improved a lot, 8 days, because of the change in legislation in France, whereas they decided that the maximum payment term a company can have is 60 days. That, of course, helped us to reduce our DSO. Germany, in January we were plus one in Germany. It's good, looking at a minus 18 on average in Q4. Still struggling a bit in our professionals business. Fantastic profit, 7.1% EBITDA again. Also in the past, as you will remember for sure, Germany has been a contributor with high EBITDA margins. And we are back there again. In-house is growing. Staffing is doing well. Professionals on the engineering, on the IT side, we're doing well with Gulp. The engineering side, we're still struggling, mainly due to the Airbus account. What else should I mention here? I think that's it. We have no more employees in short-time unemployment schemes. Everybody's back working, and we're doing well. Gaining market share, excellent. UK, mixed picture. Our in-house organization is growing actually double digit now, doing very, very well. Two reasons, I think. One, market is doing a bit better, but also we gained quite a number of large accounts already during the second part of last year, but it takes a little bit of time before you see the actuals changing, because you need time to get your own temps in there either or get them transferred from the party from whom you took the customer. General staffing so is still below in-house. In-house doing very well, and in professionals we see a mixed picture. We see some improvement in the financial area, where it was very, very tough, obviously, Jocelyn Rowe supplying financial people to the city. Well, you guys and ladies have been there every now and then. It hasn't exactly been a party last year over there. It's getting better. So next to all the improvement we've shown here with a still disappointing 0.8% EBITDA margin, that also should be mentioned. We, on top of our plant integration, actually could take it two steps further. We integrated BBT and Hill-McGlynn into Ronsot Construction, Property and Engineering. We merged the BBT healthcare part with Reliance into Ronsot Care. And as we speak, we are integrating Martin Wood Anderson and Jocelyn Rowe into one stronger financial company. That also, again, makes it easier for us to have a strong position in the market, gain more clients, make more profit, be more efficient. It all makes perfect sense, of course. North America, we already shared with you during our analyst investors day, actually, that the U.S. was growing again. The number for January is plus 6%. Which is, again, a confirmation of the trend we've already seen. Staffing is doing very well. Our IT company has also continuously done well. Although the professionals is not growing yet, but for sure has delivered a very decent profit. Our financial company is still struggling, but we are working hard to improve that situation. Margin pressure is there, not only because of market, but also because of increased SUI charges. SUI is state unemployment insurance, whereas it is a very non-American system where wherever unemployment is the highest, they increase the price for labor, which is a strange concept, but anyhow, that's how it works. And the thing is, on SUI, it's very difficult to predict what the level will be in advance, so we did already proactively increase prices with our clients to be able to absorb the increase in SUI that was expected. But then still, you even get some announced in March or in April carrying back to January 1, and obviously your clients won't repay you for that sort of money. So we do also expect some pressure from SUI still. Good cost management, operating expenses down 25%, an EBITDA margin of 2.6%, and the structural operational changes refers to our staffing company where we changed management, as you remember. We changed a few things. First of all, we have very clear targets. We have identified the segments in which we want to operate. We have introduced a very clear dashboard and a more Anglo-Saxon remuneration system, if you want, with clear bonus targets. Monthly, everybody, I've visited many branches, everybody knows exactly what they're striving for, how much more they have to actually generate to get their bonus. Going well in the right direction. But again, margin is really under pressure in that market. Market share development. The Netherlands at market, I shared with you, France, -5%, but improving rapidly. And I shared with you the about 0% change in January. Germany, we're doing well. US, doing well, although those numbers are more difficult to get to, of course. First of all, the average of the US is more or less useless, but there are no data available per area, at least not detailed enough. And we have, of course, a mix with a rather large part of professionals' business, which is late cyclical. So that is usually, in this stage of the market, below the average of the market. That doesn't help, but still. Belgium, Tempo Team above market, Randstad below market. UK, -1, is about that market. So the only one, again, worrying in my book, they should all be plus, but there's no real, very detailed data in most markets. And the difference is small, is France, but again, getting better. And Italy, where we, as we shared before, skipped quite a number of contracts where we didn't want to supply. So we voluntarily let that business go. And we think we'll be rid of that as from January 1, also in the comparison. And in the meantime, we in Belgium also implemented a new front office in Randstad and a new front and back office in Tempo Team. It's all being done at the same time as the merger, also in last year anyhow. So that also takes away of that internal focus for next year. For the full year, -27% revenue, a tremendous amount of staffing employees less, 145,000 on average. Which was about the total number of Randstad when I became CEO with Robert-Jan and the other members of the board here. Huh? So quite a change. Still pressure on gross margin, as I just described. Operating expenses down. EBITDA of 316 million. And then the good part, of course, is that also on our leverage ratio, we are now at 2.5, but very safe compared to 3.5 we should get. The cost synergy is realized, including the tax. Now, I covered most of the elements of the integration. Last time we're going to talk about integration because we have a new company with one name. It's very simple now. Most important thing which we want to do is, this one you know, it's on the slide, extracting the value of the new Randstad. What we promised you is that we would share the best practices in staffing and in-house. So we're going to transfer more clients from our branches to our in-house operation because it's better service, very often at the same margin, but for sure at a lower cost in most markets. The important one next to that, of course, is professionals. We said we would make an inventory of the best practices and then come up with strong concepts for professionals. We have finished that during Q3, actually a bit earlier. We have been testing whether or not the concepts we defined as best practice were really best practice, so we implemented them in the existing professional companies. So we've now seen the first results, and they are very, very encouraging. So we are confident we did find the right concept, which means we can speed up multiplying those concepts in other markets and get more business in existing markets, obviously. Clients looking for less suppliers is also important. As we said, the third reason for buying video next to scale and more professionals business is to service global clients better who want less suppliers in more countries and more segments. We had a record number of RFIs last year. We also had a very high success rate. So that also looks as if that strategy is working. I think that covers the operational summary of 2009, and now I hand over to Robert-Jan on the financials and the outlook.
Thanks, Ben. I think I've been doing this now for 33 quarters, and we're finalizing a very successful quarter this year. Actually, we are at the end of a very difficult year, which I would say, from a performance standpoint, has been rather successful, and that makes it very special. As you know, we have shown that through good times we have been able to manage the company successfully, but this time it's also clear that in a downturn our, let's say, preparations have worked out well. The companies have reacted quickly to the circumstances that have changed dramatically quickly, as Ben explained. Some of the key financial points here, the gross margin down, well, Ben shared that with you, 26%, so through the year we've seen severe cuts also at this level. I'll get back to the margin here. Operating expenses almost in line with 500 million. You might ask yourself, it's pretty close to 500 million. And I tell you, we didn't have any discussions about that. That was just the number that came out. It came out at 499.8, and here we are, almost 500 million. And if you compare that with the middle of last year, of 2008, I should say, the cost base on an annualized basis was roughly 3 billion. And now currently we're sort of hovering at the level of 2 billion. Diluted EPS down 47 cents. DSO, Ben mentioned it, down at to a level of 58 days. And behind this, there is a story, of course. It's just not just the payment terms discussions that we have with our clients, because these are continuing. And the frequency of those discussions has undeniably increased. At the same time, the help from the French state has been extremely effective, but also the internal processes to upgrade the way we manage our receivables have also improved, and as a result we've seen improvement of numbers here. The doubtful debts also well under control so far. If you look at the provision for doubtful debts in our business, that's between 10 and 20 basis points traditionally, and we're still well in that range. So that means so far so good. Of course 2010 will not be a lot easier, because generally this tends to be late in the cycle, the final results in terms of the bad debts. But so far, so good. We're pretty happy with the performance. Free cash flow sound again in Q4 relative to the revenue base of the company. And as a result of that, net debt has now improved to a level of 1 billion, just north of 1 billion, with a leverage ratio of 2.5 against the covenant with the bank that that states 3.5, so again in the comfort zone still. The mandatory repayment that's coming up will only be in 2011, because we have pulled a couple of those forward, because that from a commitment fee standpoint is attractive. I'm not allowed to say that with all the banks around, but as you can imagine, that's helpful to the company. The income statement, which you've all seen, at the top of the page, we're comparing apples with apples. At the bottom, just below the horizontal bar, we're comparing apples with pears, because there are very different elements in the various years. At the top, it repeats what we have just said, and it ends at a 106 EBITA, a margin of 3.3. And please note that the fourth quarter is always a relatively good quarter, like the third quarter. But the first quarter in the year, the seasonal pattern means that is always a more difficult quarter, because our clients tend to sort of come on steam rather slowly. That takes a while, working days effects as such. So the 3.3 is specific for this quarter, but we would say that's a pretty good performance. Just below the horizontal bar, you can see very different numbers. Please note that last year, the 455 loss included an impairment on the video valuation, on the video goodwill, and also the tax line included revaluations of our tax position. So it's very hard to compare that. But for the fourth quarter this year, 47 million income before taxes, very little tax. That's because of the elements that we have shared with you at the investor day, sort of three elements in here, which you've all seen at the investor day, so I won't elaborate on that now. Net income, 48 million euros. The gross margin development. Also, Ben referred to this. Please don't compare quarter sequentially, because the seasonal pattern makes that effectively impossible. 21%, this time 19.1%. the temp margin box has increased, but as we told you last quarter, not as much as the previous increase has shown, so this is in line with our expectations. And my estimate would be that roughly one quarter, at least, of this is related to the sort of the mix within the temping business, which is the fact that the industrial clients, which is the market in France, for example, and in Germany, are the ones to pick up first. That changes the business within staffing, and that brings a somewhat lower gross margin because, as Ben said, the gross margin on the industrial business is always slightly lower. So part of this is not pricing pressure, but a mix effect, and I would estimate that to be at least 25% of the total here. Perm fees down again, 46% down this time compared to 55% in the previous quarter. So that is a slight improvement. And that brings us to 19.1. And the patterns were just explained, so we expect this to move on into 2010, but as I explained, not as much as we have seen the jumps in 2009. The restructuring provisions, a lot of numbers, a lot of data here, but if you look at the total here down in the corner, it's the annualized savings. And when we managed ourselves through the cycle, we told our companies, listen, you've got a lot of flexibility in our system. If you need more, you need to reorganize, then you can initiate reorganization projects, but the earn back period has to be 12 months or sooner. And that means that our investment had to deliver this kind of return. So if you take the savings in between last year, 2008, and 2009, take out the synergies relating to Vedior, then it's like 500 million of savings. Roughly one-fifth of that is financed through restructurings. The rest is, I would say, kind of organic adjustments in the company because of natural attrition, because of lease terms for rented buildings have run out, and so forth. The consolidated cash flow statement, we have 129 from operations. We have a release of working capital. We're getting to the smaller positions here now because fortunately our revenues are getting sort of sequentially more flat, so 52 million here. And then we have additions of PPA, which is an IFRS expression, plant, property, and equipment, additions to software. If you look at it on an annualized basis and compare depreciation, which is close to 100 million, and our investments, that's close to 50 million. That's roughly the relationship here. Then we have 168 million of free cash flow, and that free cash flow was used here, as you can see, and it then connects to the change in the net debt position of 152 million. And please note that the 11 million here is there because some of the debt is in foreign currencies, and that's why we have to make adjustments here. If you look at the balance between acquisitions and disposals, it's almost nothing left in between, but that's because we sold primarily our businesses in HR Solutions and in Japan. And against that, we acquired some business, some shares, I would say, in a company in Japan, and also acquired minority interests on a balance that's close to zero or one, as you can see here. That's the cash flow statement. If you look at the overall picture from a financial standpoint, then as I said at the very beginning, very satisfied with the way we've managed through the cycle. We know how to manage in an upturn, but also in a downturn. Timely adaptation, clearly. Got two slides to support that, or two graphs to support that. Net debt reduced significantly. DSO doing quite well. And the latter point here is EVA accretion. As you know, when we announced the transaction, we told the market that we expected to be EVA positive in 2010, assuming low single-digit growth. Well, that for sure is something we haven't seen. So it is obvious that we're not there yet. It's something we're not going to forget about. It's more complicated because of the integration, but still we're going to simulate that, and we're going to follow that, and we think it's going to last a little longer, a couple of years more. But in the end, we'll keep you posted on the relative developments here on EVA, on the Vedior transaction. Timely adoption, I said I've got two graphs here. As you can see, this one here explains the trends in the employees working in the market, the green line here, and our internal employees in our branches and head offices, And it is essential to keep those two curves closely connected. And as you can see, that's what they are here. At the right-hand side, you also see the trends. One is the organic revenue growth, the purple line. And the other two are outlets, number of outlets, and the number of corporate staff. And as you can see, a lot the trends are very similar. And that is exactly the way we've managed it. Geographical performance. It was explained by Ben the reasons behind the numbers. I'm just pointing out here, no minuses. That is something we find very important as well. This slide you've seen, it's not a sort of rocket science slide, but it is sort of a summary of the items that we continue to be focused on. We've seen a lot of growth in the past. We have seen a severe decline as from the middle of 2008 into 2009. Into the second half of 2009, a clear phase of stabilization. And we hope we're going to see this now, but we'll continue to be focused on the elements here. Market share, productivity management, the conversion ratio, and of course, at the very beginning of a growth phase again, the conversion ratio should be at the very high end, not just above 50%, but higher. And that is because we'll be using the overcapacity. At a certain point in time, you might get to a situation where overcapacity is in one location, whereas you need the capacity in another one. And that might not be enough, that might not be close enough to be able to compensate it. And you can count on us that we'll invest in order to grab that kind of growth. The key thing here is return to 4% EBITDA, which is what we've shared with you in December. We shared with you some of the scenarios, and it all depends on the growth rates. Then the dividend proposal, no surprise at all. I think you would have been surprised if we would have said something else, but we'll continue the existing policy, but the capital structure must allow for it. And that there's another element here, and that is that we like to be below 2.2 times EBITDA, whereas in our banking covenants we have 3.5. Within the company, we manage the balance sheet to be at no more than 2 times EBITDA. Why? That gives us a buffer in case we'll have adverse trends in our business like the ones we've had over the last 1.5 years. Today, it's at 2.5. The confidence sort of is there in current trends and outlook, but it is fragile and our visibility is low. And it is clear that at this point in time, we're not looking at a V-shape or a kind of recovery, at least not yet in our numbers. It's too early for that. So the conclusion is not to pay out dividend on the ordinary shares. We will, however, pay out 7 million of dividend on the preferred shares, because otherwise it would be accumulated into next year. And we believe that amount. The amount is not material, so we should deal with it. The outlook going forward. The revenue trend improved. I think we've said a lot about it. But please note also that the comparison base is getting easier. Last year, 2008, December was minus 18. January was minus 24, I think. March was minus 31. So we were, in that quarter, we were in a slide which went down and we didn't know where it was to stop. So the comparison is really different, but nevertheless, the data of January show that even if you adjust for the sequential decline of last year, then you can see real growth having returned. The positive trend is visible in January, 5% organic revenue growth. We see further improvements early January. We've given you some data, like the German market being just north of zero, the French market being just south of 0% in January, the Dutch market being at minus 16, always late in the cycle and also at this point in time, but also moving into the right direction. That's sort of the outer ends of the scale that we do see. The professionals segment also is lagging behind, typically as Ben described it at the beginning. Gross margin continues to be under pressure, but conditioned as we have presented it to you. We will continue to aim to maintain the current network and be prepared going forward. That is clear because we react to the data we have on our table today. So we expect the cost base to be relatively stable given the current trends for a while. And we do not see a significant working day impact in the first quarter. There's one addition to make here. Please, if you look at the cash flows here, please note that I think your sort of your average consensus is flat against last year. If you take that number, that's not too far from the number in terms of revenues in the last quarter. That means release of working capital would also be limited if that would come through as a final result. That concludes our presentations. We're now moving to the Q&A. So, Bart.
Yeah, so we'll start in the room here. And you'll get a mic. So please state your name first and then start with your questions. Thanks.
David, you're Rabo Securities. Going back to your scenario analysis in December, Paris, last year, you were basically guiding for the cost level of 1.9 billion related to 5% sales growth. Now you're guiding basically for 2 billion SG&A. Does this imply that you've become a little bit more optimistic on top-line growth, or does it imply that your 4% EBITDA margin is less important for you for 2010? Thanks.
Yeah, we called it scenarios, and it was very much depending, and that's what we said, and I think Ben just repeated it as well, that we'll adjust based on very current trends. And what we see at this moment translates into flat developments rather than taking out 100 million more. That we could do, and our opcos have also looked at it, but given the current circumstances, that would not be the right thing to do. But that's only based on the trends we see at this point in time. Things might change in a couple of months.
Because I can imagine that you, let's say, again repeated that the 4% as soon as possible to be achieved. How does it, let's say, relate to the other things?
Yeah, we
hope structurally and long term.
Yeah, we hope that in the scenarios that we've shared with you, we also showed one more to the right side of that slide, which reflected a higher level of growth, and there you could see that the 4% is within reach then.
Frank van Wijk, SNS Securities. Yeah, I was looking at the other side for the mic. Question about the classical pattern. What do you really mean with that classical pattern that you see? Is it just the segments where you see recovery, or is it also the momentum, the strength of the recovery, and the pricing, the price pressure?
Yeah, the pattern refers to the segments, first of all to the geographies or countries in many cases, to the segments, and to the pricing. The level, of course, is unprecedented, so that cannot be a classical pattern, because we've never lost so much business so fast. But that's what we refer to.
So that would imply that you also expect a sharper recovery than the classical pattern, or is that too early?
No, because what we said consciously is that looking back, we saw now, the last couple of months, a classical pattern of recovery.
Another question about capacity. Can you say how much capacity you have at this moment, and where you have the most and where you have the little?
Yeah, it's still at about the 30% which we shared with you earlier. And I guess it's more or less evenly spread across our operation. There's no big differences, because or else we would have seen more companies or countries losing money, obviously, which they didn't. So.
Ten Theus, Fortis Bank Netherlands. Question on Germany. You mentioned that Germany was at approximately 0% in January. In the press release, you also mentioned the engineering business, which in the fourth quarter already was flat, if I read it correctly. Can you give an indication how that developed into January? Is that a business that is leading the recovery? And what segments are doing well then in Germany right now?
No, that's a misunderstanding, I think. Engineering is below the average in Germany, and has also been below the average when we talked last time in Paris.
In the press release, you mentioned that engineering is stabilizing in Germany. So
yeah, but stabilizing at the below average level.
Okay, so it doesn't mean that it's flat year on year.
No.
Okay, because I thought that.
No, that that's fair. That maybe we should have made it more clear. But so it's stabilizing at the same minus percentage, and is not getting worse. That's what we try to convey at least. My apologies if it wasn't clear. Yeah.
And then on dividend, would you consider paying an interim dividend if you come below the 2 leverage ratio this year?
Nope.
Okay. He said no. Just to make it a bit longer, no.
Afternoon, Anne Hoedenbokes from Kempen. First question is on Germany. Are you not a bit surprised by the strong recovery in the users of temps versus the 1.1 million people using Kurzarbeit? What's your view on that? And the second question is a more financial one. On the net debt to EBITDA, what would that number be if sort of the VAT support in Holland would be reversed and if the law in France would be reversed, if that's the case? Can you help me with that, please?
Yeah. We're not surprised, Benny. We don't have strong ideas on how long it should take before something will recover or not, as we said. So we see the patterns and we know the sequence. We also know, as we said before, that we're going to get articles again on jobless recovery and what have you, which also, of course, doesn't exist. It's all nonsense. It's filling up capacity. So the speed at which the capacity actually filled up in Germany, we saw it coming in our own organization. We were at about, 50 Kurztime, part-time unemployed in November still, Leo, October, November. In December we were at zero. So we saw the market picking up. So we're not surprised that also other companies have seen the same pattern there. What we've also seen, by the way, is the other opposite, that companies did phone us for flex workers and kept their own employees in part-time unemployment, because the moment they take them back, they can't put them back in part-time unemployment again. So they wanted to keep the flexibility, and to make sure that happened, they phoned us instead of taking their own people back full-time. That also happened. I don't know the exact levels of that phenomenon.
Arun, with regards to your question on the scenario, what if we would not have the VAT support and if we would not have the benefit from the reduction of DSO in France, there would be an impact on the leverage ratio of roughly 0.3%. Oh, sorry, 0.3. Yeah. But please note that the, as you know, we have advocated a lot of support for the VAT delay in terms of payment. That's not just because of ourselves, but it's also very much relating to the credit quality in the Netherlands of our clients.
If there's no more questions in the room, we'll switch to the telephone lines. Operator, could you please give it the first question?
Weeks from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Can I ask a couple of questions? The first is on SG&A. Q1, certainly, in 2009, was taken as an opportunity to reduce costs on annual contracts as they rolled off. Are you just not going to do that this time around, or is there any natural attrition there anyway? And then secondly, on advertising costs, I think in Q4 you said you were going to sort of have a special advertising campaign, and then that would actually, costs would start to come down in Q1 from the advertising. Is that still the case?
It's not across our business that temporary contracts all start on the 1st of January. There might be some emphasis on the first quarter, but we also have a lot of contracts that run out throughout the whole year. So that would be a wrong assumption to assume that.
Increase in marketing costs mainly refer to the activities we had in France, as I described during the presentation on the introduction of the Randstad brand to replace VDOB's. We'll still continue a healthy level of marketing spend through the year, by the way, because we know it's important to get back to market share gains. But it'll have some effect on the Q1 SG&A. Yeah.
Okay, and then second question on gross margins. How should we think about the gross margin? Should we be thinking about a two-year run rate, some sort of stabilization in the two-year run rate decline now?
That's heavily depending on the clients, by the way. The normal contracts are usually for a year, and then we have a number for a bit longer. The average gross margin, as I can't stress enough, of course, is highly depending on the mix. So even within staffing, as Robert-Jan described, we think that about one-third of that 1.2 is due to the fact that the mix has turned into more blue-collar, because that segment is recovering faster. Again, the average gross margin is not a reliable indicator for the profitability, because again it depends on through which of our solutions we can service the customer. Obviously, the in-house has a very different cost level than our professional businesses.
Toby, I was just thinking a little bit about your reasoning behind your first question, which is about the timing of temporary contracts, and I think you should realize that the key contributor to the natural attrition in the company is that our consultants are typically, first of all, highly educated, bachelor, master level. They are relatively young. They are in their first or second job, so they tend to continue to move to other jobs. So we still have a natural attrition of around 10-15%, and that is the key contributor to us adjusting the cost base, and that means that we just don't replace those people. That is the key element, so I'd just like to add that.
Next question, please.
Thank you. We'll take our next question from Mark Schwarzenberg from ING. Please go ahead.
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
First of all, question on to come back on David's question on the sales scenario of plus 5 and SDNA of 1.9 billion. Of course, it's a scenario, but also given the current trends, you say we probably remain on an SDNA of 2 billion. Does it then imply that you are actually expecting maybe growth of north of 5% for the year?
Dave, this is where it's not a science, but this is where it becomes an art. We could reduce the cost base further, as I pointed out, and that would then limit the capability of the company to grow. We feel that with the current developments, we should not aim at that. That's the management view here, and indeed that's driven by the most recent trends that we have shared with you.
No, I agree. If the trends tail off again and double dip scenarios, etc., that you can take out more costs. But does this then imply that based on the current trends that you are more optimistic than your scenario for 2010?
Yeah, but the scenario is not being about optimistic or pessimistic. The scenario is giving you a possible development, giving a market trend. There's no emotion attached to it, on either optimistic, nor pessimistic, nor realistic. We're just trying, at that point in time, try to give you an insight in how we could see possible developments in markets. And we had more than one scenario there, if I remember well. So that was the only intent.
We like the one to the right more.
Okay. Then another question. In December, you were down 13%. In January, you're down 5%. You say trends continued into February. Should it then taken that we can imply that February is currently growing year on year?
Yeah, I think we try to be as helpful as we can be, because we're in the service industry and we try to be nice guys. So we give you the actual trading in January. Now, I think we should not go into the weekly employees working statistics. I think that would be a bit too much.
No, but given your comps going forward for the first quarter, it's quite important if I look to consensus on zero.
No, yeah. I don't disagree with your with the fact that it's important, but I think that would go too far.
Okay.
And maybe to add to that, I mean, if we would have been growing, it would have been likely that we would have told you.
Okay.
So, I mean, and on balance, you know, with a higher proportion of revenue from the Netherlands, I mean, we cannot be as optimistic yet as some other people in the market have been showing. So, you know, you have to take that into account.
Okay, that's good enough. And then the one thing to maybe, Robert Jan mentioned that Germany was down, but I thought that Ben was saying that Germany was plus one in January,
No.
Am I wrong?
Mark, just to take out the air, I said Germany is just north of zero, and France is south of zero.
So my mistake. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Which is close to one.
North
of zero.
Okay. Clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
We'll now take our next question from Mark Dubar from RBS. Please go ahead.
Yes, gentlemen, it's Mark from RBS. Robert-Jan, to avoid any confusion, because on the one hand, you talk about the positive year-over-year growth in general staffing and in-house services. And on the other hand, now and then we mentioned the countries only. So what do you want to say, that only the general staffing businesses are growing in these countries and the in-house business, or is the country as a whole growing? I think that is a, that's an important difference.
Yeah, if you look at, I'll be a good colleague here. In-house is growing, as we said, but it's growing in France, in Belgium, the UK, Germany, Poland. But we have many, many more countries which are less important for us, but where actually staffing as a whole is growing. I have a list here. Again, US, Germany, UK, Poland, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, Portugal, Greece even. Greece, do you hear this? Turkey, India, Brazil, Mexico, Chile. They're all growing in general. So there, and there are more. So there are quite a number of markets where actually revenue is up, but it's indeed then more in general staffing, and the first ones were more specific in-house.
And to add to that list, just to give you the data once more, January, we indicated in the Netherlands minus 16, improving compared to previous months with minus 16. France and Germany, I mentioned, minus 1, plus 1. Belgium is at minus 7. The UK at minus 11, Iberia positive 6, and North America positive on balance, both staffing and professionals in total 3. That adds up to minus 5 in the month of January.
Very clear, thank you.
Very detailed too. We're not going to do this every quarter, so enjoy it.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Graham Brown from Evolution. Please go ahead.
Afternoon, hi. I just wondered if you could just give us a little bit of detail on what's happening in your UK health and education business. We're just getting some mixed messages from the market. So I think your quote is that health and education is under pressure. I just wondered if you give us a sense of whether that's price, volume. I just get a sense that that some of the NHS bodies have got consultants in looking at prices and rates. I just wondered if you'd come across any evidence of that. And then just a couple of detail points. Just wonder what was happening in terms of software investment in Q4 and what you think that's going to be like in the coming year. And then a pedantic point, I'm afraid. I just wondered just from what's happened to the restatement of the Q4 cash flow from last year. There's about a 4% increase in cash flow from operations before working capital. And that's it, thanks.
Yeah, the part about UK will be answered by Brian Wilkinson, who's also here, because he really is the expert. Brian?
Yeah, in healthcare, we have certainly seen a lot of price pressure. You're quite right. There are a number of bodies that are working with health authorities, local authorities, to look at pricing. There's a lot of intermediary activity in that sector as well, a lot of MSPs. So that's certainly affected margin and to some extent volume, in that we've had to decide whether or not we want to operate out those margins, and in some cases we've walked away. Education, because the school itself is the buying unit in I guess less sophisticated purchasers, we're not seeing a great deal of margin pressure, but we are certainly seeing pressure on volumes. Primary is still quite buoyant, but the secondary market is very, very tough. Many schools are now employing cover assistants to remove the need to go to recruitment businesses to supply cover. That said, we also had some internal issues during the quarter, which probably was more of a contributor to the relatively poor performance in that business.
On the software investments, yeah, we're not going to specify, but Robert already said that the CapEx would be something like 50 million during this year. And we'll make this a real team effort, and Robert John will answer the very difficult question you had on the restatement of cash flow in Q4 of last year.
Graham, first of all, we'll connect after the call to give you the details, but please note that there has been a restatement of an item that's now mentioned in the other non-cash items, but the total hasn't changed, so we'll connect after the meeting to sort out the details.
Okay, that's great. Just one follow-up on Brian's point. Just on the NHS, I had understood that if you're an on-framework supplier, which I think Randstad is in the UK, that the price, the rates were relatively fixed. And I just wondered, if I'm incorrect in that assumption, and two, if I'm not, what's occurring on the price side of things?
Well, you are correct in that assumption, and in our general staffing business, it is in our general staffing business that we have those framework agreements, or where we mainly supply against those framework agreements. Where we're seeing the price pressure is in the area of social work, which is mainly local authority business.
Okay, thank you very much for that.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Tom Sykes from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everybody. I wondered if you could just talk a bit more about the copy-paste strategy, and in particular the movement of staffing revenues to in-house. You mentioned the 15% of the staffing markets as a whole. I wondered, is that perhaps a little bit higher in somewhere like France? How much you think you can perhaps move revenue-wise over the next couple of years to an in-house model, whether the process is the same in somewhere like France or could be as smooth as somewhere like France as it is in other countries where you've shifted revenue from the branch to an in-house model, please.
Yeah, the 50% is a number we've been communicating as from the day actually I started with CAPAC in way before World War One. And it hasn't changed much. This is, by the way, the potential market, which doesn't mean that, all the, those 15% clients are willing to accept an in-house. We didn't exactly quantify what amount of business we would transfer to in-house. But for sure, as you mentioned, France, that indeed is a big opportunity, we see, because that's a market that's being typified by a relatively very low margin, a relatively low level of service, whereas in-house, of course, is a sort of a golden standard where clients can get at the same cost to us, same price to us, and a lower cost, potentially, a better service. And a big part, indeed, of the French market is a big industrial client, so that for sure is a big opportunity. In transferring clients, actually, it has turned out that that's the same mechanism everywhere. So it is very sensitive. You have to execute it in the right way, and we've now done it probably a couple of thousand times. So we think we know how to do it, and we don't expect any differences or more or bigger problems or less problems in France than we've seen anywhere else.
When the business is coming back, are you finding that what was business in a staffing branch you can bring back in an in-house to an in-house branch and get perhaps a bit more EBIT uplift? Is that something you are actually seeing, or is it going to be a slower evolutionary process in terms of the shift of some of that business in-house?
Well, the moment the volume is back, then we'll move it back to in-house.
Okay.
Of course, I'm a dreamer because I'm the CEO. It won't happen 100% of the cases, but by far the biggest percentage of cases, that's how it should go. Yeah.
And if I could just ask a separate note, do you intend at all to get back to giving EPS guidance at all? And what sort of level of comfort of the market are you going to get back to giving financial guidance, if at all?
Tom, we don't think you need it anymore. That's what someone's whistling in my ear, because you're so advanced by now. You know us for so long. Now, the answer is no, we're not planning that. For now, we are sort of, the key ambition is to return to 4% EBITDA, and we'll try to give you some sort of understanding of how we're going to get there, and that's how we have started our Investor Day last year.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks very much.
Thank you. We'll now take our next question from Jamie Brownwood from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, afternoon. Two questions then, if I may. Can I start by asking about the German gross margin? I think you said it was still under pressure year on year, but I'm just wondering, how was the quarter-on-quarter trend in German gross margin? Because I think, if I understand correctly, you improved idle time management in Q4 versus Q3. So I'm just wondering if your German gross margin actually increased Q4 versus Q3 and what the outlook is for that.
Gross margin was contra-cyclical here, if you look to the rest of our business. It went up instead of down.
So it did actually go up quarter on quarter?
Yeah.
And therefore the year on year presumably was down much less in Q4 than it was in Q3 in Germany, would that be fair?
Yeah, we're getting, but anyhow, it went up.
So okay, great. And then on the Netherlands, same kind of question, but in the other direction. Can you give us a little bit of a sense for how much gross margin pressure you're seeing in the Netherlands, as in whether it's worse than what you're seeing for the group as a whole, and what your expectation is on the Dutch gross margin over the coming quarters, whether you're seeing some stabilization or whether it's still got quite negative momentum behind it?
A big impact was because of Yacht, and that's more idle time, because, of course, the gross margin is the result of quite a number of variables. One of the variables is idle time in Yacht.
Yeah.
And that, of course, has an impact, whereas it doesn't mean that the market conditions have pushed us down.
Yeah, so it's like Germany, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's for sure what happened in Q4. That had an impact, but also in our general staffing business, in the big contracts, we saw quite some decline.
And have you had like a sort of a full quarter's impact of renegotiations of contracts in the staffing business in the Netherlands, or is there still more to come over the coming quarters as you renegotiate more contracts?
We have covered most contracts. Not all of them have come into effect in Q4. During Q4, a few more have. So there will still be some impact in the coming quarters.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Ben.
Thank you. We'll now take our final question from David Hancock from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Ed. Just a quick follow-up on the gross margin. The normal seasonal pattern in gross margin, could you just tell us what that looks like across the course of a year? Because, Robert Jan, as you said, we shouldn't just compare them directly quarter on quarter. So can you just give us a sense of the normal seasonal pattern without the kind of changes in mix that you may see going forwards? And secondly, on the tax rate, you were helpful enough to give us some guidance on tax rate for 2009. Can you give us a sense of where you think that may come out for 2010, please?
Yeah, some typical elements of the gross margin. Let me stick to that then. In the first quarter, first of all, as I addressed it with the slide on the outlook, is always a difficult quarter because it only starts later in January. It normally is not effective as from the first day. And for example, in Germany, where we pay monthly wages to people, that has a direct impact on our gross margin. So typically, that is an element that suppresses the gross margin. Another point is that in the third quarter, we always have some impact of the fact that in Belgium, we employ lots of students, which come in large volumes, low price, and low gross margins, but a very attractive business for us. And that is typically an element you see in the third quarter. And then finally, in the fourth quarter, it's very much dependent on the Christmas season. In 2008, we've had lots of closures of factories in the manufacturing segment, as a result of which, in some countries, we had to pay flex workers which were not employed. So these are typically driving the gross margin. Ben, any adjustments?
Yeah, maybe some additions. So it's due to mix, of course. January being the slowest month, you also have the highest idle time. That's because of season. And another one in the U.S. is that we have some thresholds. Once you've paid a certain amount of SUI, is it Greg? Not, it's XUI, it's not a works comp. Above that threshold, you don't pay anything anymore. That means that then adds to your gross margin. So it's also in time that margin improves in the U.S. during the year. Because, and in professionals, that takes maybe 1 month for them to pay the threshold. And in the lowest paid blue collar, that might take eight months before you see that improvement. But all these things have effects. So it's not only due to seasonality, but also due to the mix. And also due a result of the different markets with the different rules. So it's a fairly complicated calculation. But on balance, it usually means Q1 has the lowest margin, and then Q3 because of the holiday workers.
All right.
Great, thank you. And then on the tax rate.
What was your question on the tax rate?
Do you have any guidance for the tax rate for 2010?
Yeah, we have some guidance, and that's what we have shared at the investor conference on slide 25. And we believe that the effective tax rate will be between 20 and 22%. But you can find it on slide 25.
Thank you.
So it hasn't changed. Was that your question?
No, I mean, so that refers to the rate before amortization and before one-offs.
Yeah. But it's still the same as you gave then.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
There's no more questions from telephones. We have a few more here in the room. Conrad?
A few questions on market share. Firstly, on the U.S., you lost quite a bit of market share to Manpower in Q4. And to a certain extent, I buy the argument of the proportion of professionals business being bigger for you than for some of your competitors. Can you indicate how what the percentage of revenues is that you generate in professionals in the U.S.? And the second question is slightly different on France. I think the argument of the social plan becoming effective a bit later in the year also applies to some of your bigger competitors. So I was wondering what is exactly the percentage of your French business which you classify as blue collar?
Well, blue collar is 60% of clients in old video was large client, and large client is not, of course, all blue collar. We've got some large white collar clients, but it's high, so it's above 50%. So that has an effect. Again, the social plan has an effect. For example, also as at Adecco, but don't forget the fact that we had to wait also 1 year to merge the company. So effectively, we've had 2 years where we couldn't really plan ahead, and that has had a detrimental effect on staff morale. So that's why we think that's behind us now.
Yeah, Greg Nettles will take care of the question on the U.S., whereas the only thing I'd like to say before and is I don't know if we lost it to Manpower. I think we lost it to quite a number of players. But
Yeah, the question was the percentage of revenue. It's roughly 60 staffing, 40% professionals. Yep, and I think that certainly, when you compare us to Manpower, would explain some of the difference.
How much of that 60% would you classify as typical light industrial / blue collar?
The mix, as Ben had mentioned, our industrial business has picked up quicker, so our mix has even shifted in the U.S. I'd probably say it's 60-40 again, 60 and maybe even closer to 50-50.
So we'll move to our last question from Thijs.
Thijs Berkel, Pietcam. Question on, let's say, the cost base going forward. It's back on 2 billion, and you're more or less guiding, well, we plan to keep the cost base roughly at the 2 billion level. Hearing you talk about natural attrition, it seems to me you're not fully replacing the natural attrition yet. So does it mean that you plan to, let's say, fill the gap with extra marketing expenditures?
First of all, the 2 million, the 500 million is not a guidance. It's, you know, it's one of the scenarios we're thinking of. It depends very much on the trends, but make sure that you are sort of also take into account the next point, and that is that the underlying elements of the amount that we spent on cost are changing. So we'll have continued effects from the reorganization, from the restructuring projects, because we've not seen all of that coming through. And at the same time, we've also increased marketing efforts in certain markets. So the picture, country by country, can deviate from the overall picture. But for now, with the current trends, that's what we believe is the picture going forward. But that might change if we see trends improving in the next couple of weeks. It might also change the other way if we see them deteriorating the next couple of weeks.
But in itself, you're overall saying we are now where we want to be in terms of cost base.
But the cost savings is a result of top line. So as we said, we manage on actuals. We don't give any guidance on cost levels for the full year. So let's make sure that the 2 billion is not the guidance we are giving. We're saying that given the current information, we don't see any reasons in Q1 to have provisions to cut costs more aggressively. That's the only thing we've been trying to say.
And the ambition is to leverage the system for as long as we can, but there will be a point in each and every market where we'll have to decide to add investments.
Huh? And the other thing I'd like to add finally maybe is that was in the slide on how we behave through the cycle, that the target is to recover 50% of additional gross margin being generated. So that also indicates what happens in and that's also what the scenario is built on, which we shared with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, so with that, we'll end this meeting and also the call. Thanks for your attendance, and we'll see you next quarter. Bye.